So we've been in a study on the life of Joseph. I think this is week 5. If you've been enjoying the study, if you like this story, this first half at least, you're going to love the second half because it just keeps getting better. If you know the story, it's like it's building up, and it just keeps going, and it doesn't stop. So we've been studying Joseph, and I've been telling us each time, we're going to see this story in light of the whole book of Genesis. And I kind of repeat the theme that, you know, from the beginning, God made mankind, but things went wrong from the jump with Adam and Eve. And ever since then, God's been trying to restore things. He's trying to restore it. And we know the restoration will not be complete until Christ comes back. But we are seeing things as they progress in the book of Genesis. And what he does is he ends up choosing one particular family. And he says, from this family, he gives them some promises. I promise you these things. And he repeats those promises throughout the generations of that family. And the hope is that through this family, one day will come a redeemer, right? And we know who that person is. And so the family is the family of Abraham, and then Isaac, and then Jacob. And so we've been talking about them, and I said that each one of these men, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they've got these promises from God, but they are often faced with threats. There's things like famine that threatens each one of these. There's violence in the land. So the promises of God are kind of always being threatened. Is he going to be able to keep his promises? But he protects Abraham, and he protects Isaac, and he protects Jacob. And so we go all the way, and then Jacob ends up having 12 sons, one of whom's name is Joseph. And so we've been walking through Joseph's story. Joseph is the 11th out of the 12 sons. So it's the 11th one, and I'll show you some stuff about Joseph in a second, about the family. But what we've seen so far is Joseph's been through some things. We started in Genesis 37, and we see Joseph is favored by his father. His father gives him the coat of many colors. He favors him, and God has favor upon him because he gives Joseph these dreams that he's going to rise up and that his brothers are going to bow down to him. His brothers do not like this concept, as I think you could understand in a family situation. And so they decide, they want to kill him at first, but they resolve to just, we'll sell him into slavery. So would they sell their own brother into slavery? And Joseph, he goes through the ups and downs. He gets sold, and he's brought down to Egypt, to this man Potiphar, and he's doing well in Potiphar's house, till Potiphar's wife gets involved, tries to tempt him. But he passes that test, except for the fact that he's falsely accused and he lands in prison. And then in prison, he meets these two guys who come from Pharaoh, the cupbearer and the baker. And these guys have some dreams, and Joseph interprets their dreams correctly. And so the cupbearer, he goes back to his position, and Joseph's thinking, okay, he's going to tell Pharaoh about me, get me out of here. And he's forgotten. So this kind of up and down, he spends 2 years in prison, just thinking about these things, working through these things. And then finally his day comes when Pharaoh has dreams that he can't interpret. So Pharaoh ends up relying on this Hebrew slave to understand his dreams. And when Joseph tells him these dreams, Pharaoh rises him all the way to the second in command in all of Egypt. So Joseph has definitely gone from the bottom all the way to the top. And I think an easy way just to summarize this first half of the story is this. Joseph's testing. Joseph has been tested, and we looked in the psalm last time, even saying that God was testing Joseph, and that word was also refining. So God's been using these trials in Joseph's life to refine him, to test him. And then at the end of the last chapter, 41, we ended last week, Joseph, he told Pharaoh, here's what your dreams mean. Pharaoh, your dreams mean that there's going to be 7 years of extreme abundance in the land. Egypt is going to be overflowing with grain. Things are going to be growing and crops. It's going to be wonderful. But the 7 years are going to be followed by an extreme, severe famine. And so that's where we left last time. So if we say that Joseph has been tested for the first half, now what we're going to see is this. If God's going to use this family, and this is a dysfunctional family, these 12 guys, they all need to be tested. If God's going to use this family to bring about his purposes, Joseph's been tested, But the other brothers are not exempt. So these next few chapters we're going to see, the general summary is the brothers are going to be tested. So what we're going to do, we're going to start in chapter 42 tonight. So if you have a Bible, come to Genesis 42. We're going to try to go through 42 and 43 here. And if I had to just summarize Genesis 42 for you before we even start, let me just summarize it. Here's the sentence I wrote. God uses Joseph's disciplining to awaken his brothers' consciences. So God's going to use Joseph. Joseph's going to kind of enact some discipline on his brothers in this story. And the purpose is to awaken the brothers' consciences. They've sold their own brother into slavery. And then they lied to their father, Jacob. Remember, they took his coat, dipped it in blood, they killed an animal. They brought it to his father and said, oh, we don't know, a wild animal must have killed him. And it's been many years, we'll see in a minute, and they have not confessed to this. So Joseph's going to bring some discipline. So let's go ahead. We're going to start in chapter 42, and let's start reading. Now Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, and Jacob said to his sons, why are you staring at one another? He said, behold, I've heard that there's grain in Egypt. Go down there and buy some for us from that place, so that we may live and not die. Then 10 brothers of Joseph went down to buy grain from Egypt. But Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he said, I'm afraid that harm may befall him. So the sons of Israel came to buy grain among those who were coming, for the famine was in the land of Canaan also. So we ended last chapter saying the famine hits. So there's been 7 wonderful years of abundance, and now the famine's hitting, and we ended it saying the famine is severe. It's severe. At first, they say, oh, Egypt's doing well because they saved up the grain, like Joseph said. The other areas are doing bad. Even eventually, Egypt gets bad. But they got the storehouse, and so everybody around them is flocking to Egypt to try to get food. And so Jacob, we see he starts here saying, we need some food. The famine has hit them. And you can see he's a pretty good, encouraging father. He tells his brothers, why are you staring at one another? Like, somebody do something here. We're going to die here. So he tells them, you need to go. We need to get some food. But what's interesting, note what he does here in verse 3. 10 of the brothers go to buy grain, but Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin. So we have a slide I can show to help us kind of picture this, because I know there's a lot of names here. Go to, you get there. There you go. Jacob's family. So I showed a slide another time, kind of the hierarchy. I just want to zoom in on Jacob's family right now. So you can see Jacob is the name at the top. And if you know Jacob's story, Jacob, he wants to marry this woman, Rachel. Rachel's who he wants to marry. So he worked 7 years for her. Husbands, have you ever worked that long for your wife? He worked 7 years for her, yet the man who he works for tricks him and on his wedding night gives him Rachel's sister, Leah. So now he's got Leah, and he has to work another 7 years to get Rachel. So now he's got 2 wives. They start giving birth, but only Leah's the one who can give birth. And Rachel's the one whom he loves. So Leah's the one having children. Rachel gets jealous, and you know what she does? She tells him, well, I have a servant. Use her so we can get some children from me. So then Jacob ends up having children with Bilhah, the servant of Rachel. Well, as things continue, eventually Leah stops having children, and Bilhah's continuing to have children. The jealousy builds, and now Leah says, okay, well, I can't have any more children, so now I have children with my servant, Zilpah. So before you know it, Jacob has 4 wives and 12 sons. But what I want you to see here is, in blue is Rachel. This is the woman Jacob wanted all along. This is the one he loved. This is the one he worked so hard for. And you can see the little line coming from her. Maybe you can see it. It might be small. Rachel has 2 sons. Out of the 12, Rachel has 2. Joseph and Benjamin. And so Joseph, he's got his coat there, the coat of many colors. Joseph is the favored one. Jacob favors Joseph. But as far as Jacob, the father, knows right now, his son is dead. Right? Remember, the brothers came back and basically lied and said he got killed by an animal. So Joseph is dead. So all that remains of Rachel's sons is Benjamin. So you can see now why Jacob is being very protective. He's saying, y'all can go. This is a dangerous journey. And in a sense, he's like, I don't really care how y'all do. You're not taking Benjamin. You're not taking Benjamin. And part of that is because it's Rachel's son. And also, you have to remember, Rachel, his beloved wife, she died giving birth to Benjamin. So Joseph's gone, and Rachel's gone, and he's got Benjamin only left. And so he is saying, you are not taking him. Okay, so we continue, pick this up in verse 6. So the sons, they come now that they're going all the way down to Egypt. And in verse 6, it says, now Joseph was the ruler over the land. Okay, so this is where we ended last time. Joseph has risen. He's the second in command to Pharaoh. Joseph is the ruler over the land. He was the one who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. When Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them. But he disguised himself to them and spoke to them harshly. And he said to them, where have you come from? And they said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. Okay, so we need to understand some things here. The timeline of this. When Joseph was sold into slavery, he was 17 years old. 17. Completely separated from his family. The time when he finally rises up in Egypt, he's 30. So we've had 13 years go by. But now we have to think, the 7 years of abundance of the crops have gone by. So we've actually got 20 years since he's seen his family. 20 years. Think about how a person can change in 20 years. And now, Joseph, he's running the show. Everybody's flocking to him for food. You just imagine thousands of people, starving people. Think about the chaos of this scene. I think the closest thing that I can think of in my life was either, like, let's say during COVID, where you go to the grocery and it's like, what? Where's all that? Why is there no food here? You can feel kind of some of the panic. Or another one was Hurricane Ida. If you stayed the aftermath, it's like, there's no gas. People need gas for generators. And so people were traveling across state lines to try to go get gas. And the lines would be so long. So picture, these people are starving, and there's a lot of them. And so Joseph's doing his normal thing. And what does he see? Amongst the thousands of people that are coming to him, he sees this ragtag group, and he knows, there's my brothers. Wow. How would you feel? I mean, 20 years. Now, here's what's interesting. He recognizes them, but they don't recognize him. So he recognizes them because they're Hebrews. They're in the land of a bunch of Egyptians. They're shaggy, they're bearded, they're shepherds, they might probably stink. They speak Hebrew, they don't speak Egyptian, so they stand out. But they don't recognize him. We have another picture here of Joseph. Now, if you remember from the end of the last chapter, when Pharaoh gave Joseph his promotion, he did several things to him. He put on a robe. He gave him a ring. He put gold around his neck. He did all these things. He's Egyptianizing Joseph. Now, I don't know if this is extremely accurate, but it just gives you the picture. Some of these officials in Egypt, they would even wear like eye makeup, kind of like black around their eyes. He's got this black wig on. He's got maybe something around his chest. He might have been in a robe here. He's shirtless. Might have been in a robe. But they don't recognize him. It's been 20 years. I mean, just think if you looked in like a yearbook, 20-year yearbook. He's probably clean shaven. But there's something else to this. So this is actually not fully accurate, because this is actually the scene where he reveals himself to his brothers. But if you notice something in our passage here, it says Joseph's brothers came and they bowed their faces to the ground. When you come before an official in Egypt, you don't look at them. So not only does he probably look different, they're not looking up. Their faces are looking down. You don't make eye contact with this guy. So they don't recognize him. And there is not the slightest thought in their minds that this could be their brother. The last time they saw their brother was 20 years ago. They sold him to these Ishmaelite traders, and they know they were probably going to Egypt, but they don't know. They literally don't know anything else. They don't know if they made it to Egypt. They don't know if they sold him in Egypt. They don't know if he's alive, dead. This is the last thing on their mind. But did you catch that detail that's important here in this verse? What did Joseph's brothers do when they came? They bowed down to the ground. Now, why is that important? There's the dream. 20 years ago, he had a dream that his brothers would bow down to him. And hear all that he's been through, and here it's coming to pass. Now, again, if you're Joseph, you're thinking, well, there are probably many thoughts going through your mind. 20 years, and it's not just like a reunion, like I love my brothers, I haven't seen them in 20 years. These are the very men who wanted to kill you, and then they threw you in a cistern, in a well, basically to die. And then they said, okay, maybe we don't want them to die, let's just get some money off of it. And then they sold you. 20 years of your life, probably the most, you know, ripe years of your life are just gone because of these men. And now they're standing in front of you, and now you have the power of life or death over them. You could think about the maybe mix of emotions that are going on. How do I handle this? So we're going to see how Joseph starts to handle this. Let's continue in verse 8. Joseph had recognized his brothers, although they did not recognize him. Joseph remembered the dreams which he had about them. And he said to them, "You are spies. You've come to look at the undefended parts of our land." Then they said to him, "No, my lord, but your servants have come to buy food. We are all sons of one man. We're honest men. Your servants are not spies." Yet he said to them, "No, you've come to look at the undefended parts of their land." And they said, "Your servants are 12 brothers in all, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. Behold, the youngest is with our father today, and one is no longer alive." How the tides have turned. And so Joseph starts to do some things here. Again, if it was any one of us, you could be very tempted to enact vengeance, right? Let's just take out the full wrath on these guys. But that's not what Joseph's going to do. He starts putting a little pressure on them. Okay, now we're not going to lie. There might be a little human in here, right? Let's make them squirm a little bit. Okay, you're not going to get off the hook fully here. But he says you're spies. And that's kind of interesting. Why did he choose spies? Well, one thing that we could think about is that is actually basically the claim that they made about him. You remember in the very beginning when they're out shepherding the sheep and the father sends him to go check on them and he comes back and gives a bad report about them? What do you think they were telling each other? This guy, this tattletale, we got a spy. We got a rat. So he says, "You're spies." And they say, "No, we're honest men." Now, there are a lot of things, but they're not honest men. But again, he starts making them squirm. And as he keeps pushing this forward, he keeps saying, no, you're spies. And what they're doing is they're slowly starting to give him more information. They start off saying, "We came from Canaan. We're 12 men." Then they say, "Our father's there." And then they say, "We have another brother." Now, if you're Joseph, your ears are perking up. My father's still alive. I haven't seen my father in 20 years. And not only my father, my little brother. And Benjamin was probably only like 1 year old, if not, you know, when Joseph last saw him. My little brother from my same mom. He's still alive, potentially? But then look at the last thing they say here at the end. "The youngest is with our father today, and one is no longer alive." Now, how ironic is this? The one who's no longer alive is the one standing right there. But imagine how Joseph felt. Right in the heart. They think he's dead. And at this point, he can't even tell if they care or not. And so Joseph, he's going to keep this going. So we continue in verse 14. "Joseph, he said to them, 'It's as I said to you, you're spies. By this you'll be tested.'" And here's our word, tested. by the life of Pharaoh, you shall not go from this place unless your younger brother comes here. Send one of you that he may go get your brother while you remain confined, that your words may be tested whether there's truth in you. But if not, by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies. So he put them all together in prison for 3 days. So Joseph he's testing them. He's testing them. And again, what we said in the beginning, he's going to test them. He needs to see, have these guys changed? Is there any possibility of reconciliation? Have they changed? It's been 20 years. A lot can happen. Is there any chance they've changed? And for this to work and reconciliation to be possible, reconciliation is going to require them taking responsibility. They got to take some responsibility here. So we got to find out, are their consciences even awakened at all? And so he says, I'm going to keep y'all here, and one of you needs to go back and get your younger brother. You tell me you got a younger brother. Okay, we're going to test this out. One of y'all is going to go get him. But then he gives them a little time to think about it in verse 17. He puts them all together in prison for 3 days. He's like, you know what? Okay, let's give these guys a little time to think about what they've done. And I wonder if, even at the mention, as the words are coming off their lips of, and one of our brothers is no longer alive, I just wonder if that triggered something in them. One's no longer alive. And now, you next thing you know, they're sitting in this jail cell. They just come to get food. And for 3 days, he's putting them in this jail cell. And I don't know if he's telling them, y'all got to deliberate for 3 days, which one of y'all is going to go. It doesn't tell us, but just imagine what they were thinking about for these 3 days. So he reverses things by calling them spies. Then he reverses things by putting them in prison. He ended up in prison. He's like, y'all going to get a taste of this too. Gives him a little time to think. Here's how Pastor Alistair Begg talks about this. Back in Dothan, Joseph protested his innocence, but had been treated with harsh words, imprisonment in a cistern, and finally deportation to Egypt as a slave. Now the brothers were protesting their innocence, and Joseph responded with harsh words and imprisonment. The tides have turned. Okay, so they get 3 days to think about it. Let's see what happens. Verse 18. Now Joseph said to them on the third day, "Do this and live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers be confined in your prison, but as for the rest of you, go carry grain for the famine of your households, and bring your youngest brother to me so your words may be verified, and you will not die." And they did so. So he lets them out 3 days in, and he says, "Do this and live, for I fear God." Now that's kind of interesting, because in their minds, this is some Egyptian person. And he's saying, "I fear God," and the word he uses is Elohim. So this could have been more just a more general term for a deity, but it's possible that he's trying to relate to them, the very God that you all are not fearing, I fear. And what we're going to see is the very mention of the fear of God starts to work on these men's consciences. So he changes the plan and he says, okay, I'm letting you out, but one of you has to stay. Before he said one of you is going to go, but now he's saying, you know what? One of you's got to stay here. I'm going to make sure you come back. One of y'all is going to stay here and the rest of y'all are going to go back and get your brother. If we thought that Joseph had a crazy day when he gets out of prison, I think the brothers are having an equally just as crazy day for them. They were just coming to get food. Now they're being questioned by the second person in command. They're accused of being spies. They're thrown in prison for 3 days, and they're threatened with death if they do not go all the way back to Egypt and get their brother. But Joseph is doing something. He's working on their consciences. And we get to see what they were probably thinking about in those 3 days in verse 21. Then they said to one another, "Truly, we are guilty concerning our brother, because we saw the distress of his soul when he pleaded with us, yet we would not listen. Therefore, this distress has come upon us." Reuben answered them, saying, "Did I not tell you, do not sin against the boy, and you would not listen? Now comes the reckoning for his blood." And then it says, they did not know, however, that Joseph understood, but there was an interpreter between them. So the hammer's coming down, and the brothers are talking. And I just find it so interesting. 20 years this has gone by. They've probably... Look, you know what this reminded me of as I was studying this? This literally reminded me of what we just preached with David in Psalm 51. He commits his sins, and he's hiding for a year. He doesn't confess his sins to God. And he has to be confronted in order to confess his sins by Nathan the prophet. We got the brothers here. It's been 20 years. They've probably done everything they can to put this under the rug. And now they're being confronted, and now you see their consciences are starting to go. They're guilty of a few things, one particularly, just hard hearts. Truly, we're guilty concerning our brother because we saw the distress of his soul when he pleaded with us, yet we would not listen. And if you remember back in Genesis 37, they threw him, the first thing they did, they threw him in a well. They were just going to leave him there to die. And we don't actually get the detail here, but here we're hearing he's pleading with them. Please don't do this. Please don't leave me here. Guys, come on, let's talk. Please. Pleading. And what? Remember what they did? Do we remember what they did while he's pleading with them? They sat down to eat a meal. How heartless. To eat a meal. They were eating while he's begging to get out. They're also guilty of shedding blood. Here comes the reckoning for his blood. But here's what's so interesting. They had hard hearts, but they could not run from their consciences. They can't run. The conscience is working. That guilt was always under the surface. John Walton, a commentator, says, "We discover that in the intervening years, the guilt experienced by Joseph's brothers has enslaved and imprisoned them no less than Joseph's change had done to him." So for 20 years, they got this underneath going on. And it says that they did not know, in verse 23, that Joseph understood them. Because you got to remember, they're over here speaking Hebrew. Joseph knows Hebrew. He grew up speaking Hebrew. He had learned Egyptian when he was sent to Potiphar's house. And he's talking to them through an interpreter. He's not letting it known that he knows what's going on. So he's talking to the interpreter in Egyptian, then the interpreter's talking to them in Hebrew, and back the other way. So they don't realize he's hearing every word. He's hearing every word. How do you think he feels hearing them discussing this? He's hearing his own brothers who tried to kill him. They're showing that they have guilty consciences over what they did to him. We can see how he feels in verse 24. He turned away from them and wept. I mean, this is the worst. He's reliving the worst moment of his entire life. I mean, imagine the worst moment of your life and you're now reliving it. But also, he's seeing these hard-hearted men finally starting to break. He turns away and weeps, and we keep going. But when he returned to them, he spoke to them, and he took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. So he takes one of the brothers and he says, we're going to make sure that you get this message. He bounds Simeon up in front of them. So they're watching as one of their brothers gets taken and gets tied, bound up. He takes Simeon, binds him before their eyes, and then Joseph gave order to fill their bags with grain and restore every man's money in his sack and to give them provisions for the journey, and thus it was done for him. So this is interesting here. He now has to decide, okay, how am I going to handle this? And he says, I'm going to take one of them, and I'm going to choose Simeon. Imagine pulling straws. But Simeon gets picked, and I think what Joseph's doing here, he's working on their consciences. He wants them to see this. Because guess what? It happened 20 years ago. They watched another one of their brothers be bound up and taken away. That's Joseph. He wants them to feel a little bit of what he felt. And here's another chance for them to abandon another brother in slavery to Egypt. Now, before you get to feel too bad for Simeon, we got to remember some things. Anybody remember Simeon and Levi? These are bad dudes. These aren't just like your innocent brothers. Simeon and Levi were the two brothers who went into the town of Shechem and killed every single man that was in there because one of the men defiled their sister. Every man, they went in there and killed. And I was studying this, and at first you kind of feel bad for Simeon, of course. You're like, oh my goodness, this poor guy, he's getting thrown in prison. But then I realized, wait a second, this is a bad dude. I mean, he went in there and killed every, I mean, they just didn't find the one guy who defiled the city. He killed every man. These are hardened men. But now the brothers have to go back to their father, and they're missing a brother yet again. But also notice in verse 25, Joseph, he's disciplining them, but you know what he also does here? Joseph shows them grace. It's not just the hammer coming down. He shows them grace. Look at verse 25. Then Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain, so he's given them grain, and to restore every man's money in his sack. He gives all of them their money back. They get this grain for free. And he gives them provisions for the journey, and thus it was done for them. He could have killed them, but he's responding with grace. I think this is a good application for how God treats us. Right? They're coming to him. They're the guilty party. They deserve the punishment. Yet he's given them grace. He's given them provisions. He's given them their money back. This is how God responds to us. But we're not sure. Let's see how they feel about this when they find out that they got their money back. Keep going in verse 26. So they loaded their donkeys with their grain and departed from there. Now look at this. As one of them opened his sack to give his donkey fodder at the lodging place, he saw his money. And behold, it was in the mouth of his sack. Then he said to his brothers, my money's been returned. Behold, it's even in my sack. And their hearts sank. And they turned trembling to one another, saying, what is this that God has done to us? So Joseph was being gracious, but maybe he had some thoughts in there of setting this trap. And their guilty consciences, the second that they see this, they don't think, oh, he's being gracious to us. They think, oh my goodness. He was just calling us spies. Now he's going to call us thieves. I find it interesting that this is the first time in the story where the brothers mention God. Oh, what's God doing to us now? He's getting us back. Here it is. Again, here's what Alistair Begg. What we're seeing here are hearts and minds set on jagged edge by 20 years of living with unrepented sin. We saw the same response earlier when Joseph accused the men of spying. Their consciences were so agitated that the slightest hint of wrongdoing or accusation brought them right back to the point of that sin that they committed and departed from God. What has God done to us? Okay, so now they got to get back and tell their father. They got to break the news again to their father that we don't have the son. Verse 29. When they came to their father Jacob in the land of Canaan, they told him all that had happened to them, saying, the man, the Lord of the land, he spoke harshly with us, and he took us for spies of the country. But we said to him, we're honest men, we're not spies. We're 12 brothers, sons of one father. One is no longer, and the youngest is with our father today in the land of Canaan. The man, the Lord of the land, said to us, by this I will know that you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers with me, and take grain for the famine of your household, and go. But bring your youngest brother to me, that I may know that you are not spies, but honest men. I will give you your brother to you, and you may trade in the land. Now it came about as they were emptying their sacks, that behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when they and their father saw their bundles of money, they were dismayed. So they come back to their father and they retell him the whole story. And then they're unpacking. And not only did the one brother see that he had money, now they're all unpacking. Every man's money is back. They're thinking, what is this? Is the craziest day of our lives. What is going on right now? This was the second time they had come home with money, having abandoned a brother to prison in Egypt. All right, well, how does Jacob feel? 36, their father Jacob said to them, you have bereaved me of my children. Jacob is no more, and Simeon is no more, and you would take Benjamin? All these things are against me. Then Reuben, the eldest brother, he spoke to his father, saying, you may put my two sons to death if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my care, and I will return him to you. But Jacob said, my son shall not go down with you, For his brother is dead, and he alone is left. If harm should befall him on the journey you are taking, then you will bring my gray hair down to Sheol in sorrow." So they relay the news. Doesn't go over well. We lost another brother. And the man of the land says, "We got to take Benjamin with us. Your other favorite son, we got to take him too." And Jacob's like, "You've got to be kidding me. The whole family's falling apart right now." This is, I think, one of the lowest parts. The family's completely falling apart. And then we see Reuben. So this is interesting. Reuben's the firstborn. He's the one who should be the leader of the family. He should be the one who's able to lead the family. And Reuben, here's his suggestion. Look at how good this one is. He tells his father, "Look, Dad, let me take Benjamin. I'll protect him. If I don't protect him, you can kill my sons." What type of suggestion is this? Why would Jacob put his favorite son in the hands of a man who cares so little about his own sons? This is how you're going to win? This is how you're going to convince him? And then you see also, he says, in verse 38, Jacob said, "My son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he alone is left." Now, how do you think the other brothers feel right now? I mean, he's literally acting like he's just got the one son left. Like, "Thanks, Dad." And he says, if something happens to him, you're going to bring my hair down to Sheol, to the dead. I'm going to go to the grave. I'm going to die. And we've heard this before. This is exactly what he said when they found out that Joseph was dead. So this chapter ends with Simeon still in prison, Jacob unconvinced to let Benjamin go, but the consciences of the brothers have started to be awakened. They're starting to be awakened, their consciences. Okay, so now we're going to continue. We're going to see, here's my one-sentence summary for chapter 43. I'm going to put it like this. The last one was how God used Joseph's discipline to awaken their consciences, so that the kind of theme there was discipline. Now here's what's interesting. I'll put it this way. God's going to use Joseph's grace to prepare the brothers for their final test. So they get discipline at first. We're about to see right now they're going to get grace now. And it's like the 1-2 punch here to prepare the brothers for the final test. So chapter 43, it says, "Now the famine was severe in the land. So it came about when they had finished eating the grain which they had brought from Egypt, that their father said to them, 'Go back and buy us a little food.'" Now, I don't know if you're me, but I'm thinking, how long has this been? They finished all the food that they come down with. And you know what I'm really thinking about? Simeon. He's been in prison this whole time. We don't know how long it's been. It doesn't say exactly how long it's been. Clearly, Simeon wasn't loved enough by his father for him to go back. So he says, "All right, we're running out of food. Y'all going to have to go back." And then look at verse 3. A new character enters here, who we've seen before. Judah spoke to him, however, saying, "The man solemnly warned us that you shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. If you send our brother with us, we will go down and buy food. But if you do not send him, we will not go down. For the man said to us, 'You will not see my face unless your brother is with you.' Then Israel said, 'Why did you treat me so badly by telling the man whether you still had another brother?'" So here's Judah. Now this is things are getting interesting now. The last time we saw Judah was in chapter 38. And do you remember what Judah was doing in chapter 38? Judah, this is after they sell Joseph, Judah kind of runs away. Maybe the guilty conscience. He runs away from the family. He goes to his own place, getting some space, physically and spiritually. He marries a Canaanite woman. He has 3 sons. 2 of the sons, God takes their lives because they're evil. So he's lost 2 sons in this process, Judah. And then we do heard the whole crazy story of Judah, and he promises his daughter-in-law that she can marry his youngest son when he's of age, but he doesn't keep the promise, so she takes some things into her own hand, and there's the crazy story where she pretends like a prostitute, And he sleeps with her, doesn't know it's her, and at the very end of the story, she reveals her identity to him. And he ends that saying, she is more righteous than I.
That would be three sons.
Three sons. He loses two. And then there's a... Right, but I'm saying he has, Judah has the three sons. Two were taken by the Lord for their evil, and he's got the third son whom he promises to Tamar. Right?
It's three.
Three. Sorry if I misspoke. But the third son he promised to her, and he didn't give it to her. And so that's like his lowest spot, Judah's lowest spot here. He gets called out for it. And what I said was, that was important, that chapter, because we see the beginning of Judah, his lowest spot, and now we're going to see a very different Judah. A very different Judah. So we keep going. Now let's see, what is Judah's plan? We heard Reuben's plan to try to get his father to take Benjamin. Now we're going to hear Judah's plan. Look at verse 8. Judah said to his father Israel, send the lad with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, we as well as you and our little ones. And then here's what he says. I myself will be surety for him. You may hold me responsible for him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame before you forever. For if we had not delayed, surely by now we could have returned twice. So now we have Judah's plan contrasted with Reuben's plan. The firstborn makes the plan, and his plan is, send him with me. If something happens, you can kill my sons. But Judah, he's got a different plan. Send him with me. If I do not bring him back to you, I will bear this blame personally forever. This is a very different Judah. This is a Judah, this is a sacrificial act here. Before we said he's opportunistic. He was finding ways to get gain for himself. He realizes that if this trip is not made, their entire family is at risk of starvation. So he offers himself at the cost of losing Benjamin on the journey. So this is a very different Judah. So, verse 11, their father Israel said to them, if it must be so, then do this. Take some of the best products of the land in your bags. He's saying, if y'all are going to do this, all right, we got to do this right. Take some of the best products, carry down to the man as a present a little balm and a little honey, aromatic gum and myrrh, pistachio nuts and almonds. Take double the money in your hand and take back in your hand the money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was a mistake. Take your brother also and arise and return to the man, and may God Almighty grant you compassion in the sight of the man, so that he will release you to your own brother and Benjamin. But as for me, if I'm bereaved of my children, I am bereaved. So the men took this present, and they took double the money in their hand and Benjamin. And they arose and went down to Egypt and stood before Joseph. So Jacob says, okay, you can go. If I'm bereaved of my children, I'm bereaved. And he says, take a gift, though. Take this gift with you. And we've seen Jacob do this before. He knows what he's doing. If you remember the story with Jacob and Esau, his brother, he dupes his brother out of the birthright. He has to run away because of it. All this, his whole thing with having all these wives started because he had to run away. Years later, Jacob and his brother are coming to cross paths, and he's scared for his life. He thinks, oh, here, he's going to get me. And do you remember what he does? He takes all of his livestock, he puts them into bundles, and he starts sending them ahead as a gift. If I send each of these, this might butter him up a little bit, soften him up. So he's done this before. And he sends them these interesting gifts, gum, balm, myrrh. These are the same gifts that the Ishmaelites had when they were coming down. Kind of interesting there. But you see, he's ultimately left with no options. He has to trust God. May God Almighty grant you compassion. So the brothers go. And I don't know about you, but I think this was probably the longest walk of their life. Like, we got to go back to this man. He was so harsh with us. One of the commentators said they're probably quaking in their sandals. But remember what I said. The first time they went there, they're expecting a normal time, and they get disciplined. Now they're expecting discipline, and you know what they're going to receive instead? Grace. Instead, they're going to receive grace. Verse 16. They're back now in Egypt. They're standing before Joseph. When Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to his house steward, "Bring the men into the house and slay an animal and make ready, for the men are to dine with me at noon." So Joseph sees that his brother Benjamin is with them, and he says, "We're going to have a feast." So the man did as Joseph said and brought the men to Joseph's house. So they show up. Again, they're thinking, he's going to be harsh with us. Next thing they know, they're being personally escorted to this commander's house. Now again, what do you think they're thinking? Oh my goodness, this is it. This here it comes. He's bringing us to his house? Verse 18, "Now the men were afraid because they were brought to Joseph's house, and they said, 'It is because of the money that was returned in our sacks the first time that we are being brought in, that he may seek an occasion against us and fall upon us and take us for slaves with our donkeys.'" Guilty consciences again, on edge. A line from Shakespeare, "Suspicion always haunts the guilty mind." They're thinking, here it is. And we continue. "It's because of the money. He's going to take our slaves." And in verse 19, "So they came near to Joseph's house steward, and they spoke to him at the entrance of the door of the house. And they said, 'Oh, my lord, we indeed came down the first time to buy food. And it came about when we came to the lodging place that we opened our sacks. And behold, each man's money was in the mouth of his sack, our money in full. So we've brought it back in our hand. We've also brought down other money in our hand to buy food. We do not know who put our money in our sacks.'" So they come clean this time. They're just going to say it straight up. They see the steward of the house, not Joseph yet. And they're like, "Okay, look, man, before we even come in, let's just get this off of our chest. We found the money. I promise we didn't take it. We brought it back. We brought the money back, and we brought more money." And so the steward says, "Be at ease." The word, shalom. Shalom, do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has given you treasure in your sacks. I had the money. I mean, this is the complete opposite welcome that they were expecting. The first time that they heard about God, Joseph was saying, "I fear God." So the fear of God's there. The second time they're hearing about God, "Be at ease. Don't be afraid. Your God, the God of your father, has given you this treasure." Discipline and grace. Then he brought out Simeon to them. I imagine this is an awkward kind of reunion here. "Hey, Simeon, sorry." Then the man brought the men into Joseph's house and gave them water, and they washed their feet, and he gave the donkeys fodder. So they prepared the present for Joseph's coming at noon, for they heard that they were there to eat a meal. So they're taken into the house, they're cared for, their feet are washed, their donkeys are fed. Again, the grace is being poured on them. They know they're going to see Joseph, who they don't know it's Joseph, but whoever this man is. So they start getting their presents ready. Let's make sure these almonds look good. Which one of y'all's got the pistachios? Okay, set these up. Let's have this laid out for when he comes in. And now the reunion, 26. When Joseph came home, they brought into the house to him the present which was in their hand, and they bowed down to the ground before him. Here's another bowing down. Then he asked them about their welfare, and he said, "Is your old father well, of whom you spoke? Is he still alive?" They said, "Your servant, our father, is well. He is still alive." They bowed down in homage. Another bowing. As he lifted his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, important, he said, "Is this your youngest son, your youngest brother, of whom you spoke?" And he said, "May God be gracious to you, my son." And then notice, Joseph hurried out, for he was deeply stirred over his brother, and he sought a place to weep. So the first time he sees these brothers, it's the brothers who sold him 20 years later. Now he's being reunited with his little brother. 20 years. Imagine not seeing your little sibling for 20 years. And again, he was probably pretty young at first when the last time he saw him, probably 1 year old even. And now he sees him and he's overcome with emotion. He's got to run out and weep. And then it says, verse 31, Then he washed his face, and he came out, and he controlled himself. And he said, serve the meal. So they served him by himself, and them by themselves, and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves. Because the Egyptians could not eat bread with the Hebrews, for that is a loathsome to the Egyptians. So they set them all separate. Joseph's by himself, his brothers are by themselves, and the Egyptians are separate too. They don't even want to sit. These shepherds, these Hebrews, we're not sitting with them. Now they were seated before him. Now check this out. This is like one of my favorite details. They were seated before him, the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth. And the men looked at one another in astonishment. You know, they have assigned seating at this dinner. And the assigned seating is in the exact same order of their birth. So you got the oldest one here, you got Reuben, and then you got, I can't remember who's the next, Levi or Simeon or one of them, Judah. All the way down, so you got Reuben here, everyone's in order, and then Benjamin right on the end, all the way. Now, they look at themselves, I mean, just imagine this. This whole time, they're thinking, God knows what we've done. He's after us. They're looking around. They're whispering, how did he know? What is going on? I can't imagine. Now, here's what it says. Joseph, he took portions to them from his own table. But Benjamin's portion was five times as much as any of theirs. So they feasted and drank freely with him. I think this is probably two things. I think two reasons here. Again, I think Joseph is just pouring out his love on his little brother. He can't just go hug him yet. You know, he hasn't disclosed himself. He can't just go run up and hug him. So he's like hugging him with the food. He's like, he gives them all food. And again, now just picture the table. You got Reuben over here, and he's probably thinking, you know what? Finally, somebody knows. You know, I'm the first. I get the place of honor. But then as he's got this huge dish coming, he's coming. It's like when you're at a restaurant and you order your food and you're starving and, like, you see the waiter and he's coming right at you and then he, like, goes to that other table. You're like, I imagine he's coming to Reuben and Reuben's like, yeah, nope, not Reuben. What? Nope, not Simeon. Nope, Benjamin. Right in front of Benjamin. Five times as much as the rest. So I think part of that is he's just simply pouring his love on his brother, but I think there's another reason for it. Joseph is preparing these brothers for one final test. One final test. They're relatively at ease here. They're eating and drinking freely, but I think they're still a little bit on edge. And the test is this. They're going to get a redo. They're going to get a redo. They sold Joseph because he was favored, and they were jealous. And now here's Joseph's brother. He's now favored by the father, and now he's favored by this Egyptian person. He's got five times the food. I think he's setting them up for a redo. So in this story, we see a combination of God's discipline and God's grace. And we'll end it there. Now, if you're here today, you have to come next time because this is possibly the best of this entire story coming, okay? Okay, let's pray. Father, thank you for your word. Thank you for stories like this. Thank you for giving us these lessons. Lord, one thing about your word that is so wonderful is it is just so real. You read these stories and you can feel the emotions. You can feel the pull different ways. Do I do vengeance? Is there grace? What do I do? You can see the guilty consciences at work. Lord, but most of all, we see you through this whole thing working. You are working, Lord. Father, we're grateful that you sometimes discipline us. As your children, sometimes you do that to bring us back to you, to help us walk closer with you. And Father, we are thankful for your grace. We do not deserve it. We, like these brothers, are guilty. Yet you lavish your love and your grace upon us. Help us to learn that this evening. In your name we pray. Amen.